Hello, can you hear me? Good. So my name is Tarek Madkour. I'm a program manager on the Visual C++ team back in Seattle. And I work on the compiler, the libraries, and the IDE in Visual C++. So pretty much played on a different areas. Been working on that for about the past 10 years, ever since Visual Studio 2002. So everything good you can see there, you probably can't attribute back to me, but everything bad you've seen there, you can probably talk to me about it and blame me for it. I'll be talking to you about using the Windows runtime from Visual C++, so Windows 8. This is sort of a part of a two-talk series. I'm talking also tomorrow after lunch to talk about the UI part of it. So this is going to be more of the, you know, from the code, how do you call Windows runtime APIs. Tomorrow I'm going to talk about the new UI framework that we're creating and how you can actually use that from C++. So today I'll focus on the code part, and that's really divided into two parts, really. A language, you know, what, you know, how you can call that from C++ as a language, and changes that we've added to the libraries such that you can call into WinRT and use some of the WinRT types that are being created. So I'm going to talk about both of them. And at the end, I'll try to make sure that we have time for questions. Also, feel free to just interrupt me in the middle. If you have a question, just raise your hand, and I'll probably see it. It's a small room, so we should be able to do that. But before I start, I just wanted to quickly get in. How many of you are C++ developers? Almost everybody. Okay. How many of you are already familiar with Windows 8, have looked at Windows 8? Just a few. Okay. Anybody been to the Metro session on Windows 8, what Metro style applications are? Half. Okay, so the other half don't. So I'll actually spend maybe a, you know, 5 minutes in the beginning just giving a very quick recap of Metro style applications and Windows runtime and what that is and why you care and why C++ makes sense there. For those of you who have seen the first couple of slides before, this would be a recap of what you should have really remembered from those slides. So hopefully you find it valuable still. So what is a Metro-style application? This laptop has Windows 8 on it, has a start screen that looks pretty much like this, with applications that you can run. You can touch any of them, and it runs the application full screen. Those applications you get from an application store. So a customer can go and say, oh, very nice application, I want that one, download it, they see reviews on it. If they like it, they click it, and it comes to their desktop. Then they can touch it and run it. Why did we create this thing? The idea is to have touch-first experiences. So we wanted to create a full experience for touch-first applications. Now that same Windows also still has the desktop, which I can Alt-Tab back to. And here it has just my regular PowerPoint starting, or in my case, I also have Visual Studio started, or anything else. Both of them available on every copy of Windows 8 that you're going to get. Today I'm going to focus mostly on the Metro-style applications. If you want to create one of those applications that are shown here, how do you do that from C++, and why would you want to do that from C++? To do that, I'll talk first about Windows 8 from an API perspective. I'm talking about the Windows runtime. What is really the Windows runtime? Who has seen this slide before? Half with an app. Okay, good. So I'll start from the bottom, you know. Windows 8 still has got Windows in the core, okay? Pretty much everything that has been there in Windows 7 is still there. So all the Windows 7 applications, you should expect to be able to run them on Windows 8. We've also got the part on the right here, which is the desktop applications. And those continue to run. Desktop applications, think of them as every application that currently runs on a desktop or a laptop or anything. I know we call it desktop, but it's all whatever runs in the regular mode of Windows that you've all used before. What we're adding is what we're calling the Metro style applications, which is this part in the middle there. And to build that, we thought, okay, we need to make sure that our APIs are exposed to the languages that we want. So we had two challenges. One is exposing our APIs just as a whole. What do these look like? And the second one is how do we make it accessible to the different languages? If you've looked at the Windows APIs recently, you know, you'll see that they've had an interesting evolution ever since, you know, the early 90s. In the early 90s, when we first introduced Windows, all the APIs were clean, flat C, They all looked like each other. If you wanted to call something, it all looked like it was designed by one person, you know. And then over the years, we continued adding APIs, and you know, we invented new things. We invented COM. We had new COM APIs. Then some people thought, oh, well, this is too much to actually bring in for just my type of API. So we had, like, smaller versions of COM that, you know, we've invented along the years. And some people tried to do, like, a C++-style thing on their APIs, but C++ doesn't really have a binary interface. So they ended up with, like, a hacked-up C++ thing. So now, if you look at the Win32 APIs, it's a big list. A lot of APIs, very, very useful. But there isn't really a coherent style to those APIs. So when we said, okay, to those new applications, we're going to expose a new API set, we might as well pick one of those styles or have a new style and have all the APIs fit that style. The second thing we wanted to do was Win32 is very easy to access from C and C++. It is harder to access from .NET. You can do it through COM Interop if it's a COM API, or you can do it through pinvoke DLL import if it is amenable to that. Some APIs are very hard to use that way, so they're not really accessible to .NET, but somewhat accessible. If you work your way through it, you will get it. They're not really accessible from JavaScript at all. If you have a web application and you want to be able to call into Win32 APIs, the only thing you have is drop away from JavaScript, use another language, write an ActiveX control, and use that. So how do we make all those APIs accessible to the three families of languages that we care about? So we created the Windows runtime for that. So Windows runtime is basically a runtime. If you're familiar with COM, how many have used COM before? How many are happy using COM? So we said, okay, let's find ways. WinRT is much like Windows runtime. WinRT for short. WinRT is much like COM, but it's really based on COM principles, but it is not COM. It is a much simpler, much slimmer and smaller in many ways. But it achieves the goals that we wanted, which is it allows us to expose it to the number of languages we want, and it provides a good binary interface so that you can create a component in one DLL and, you know, use that component from another DLL, and that should be just fine, regardless of the language of that DLL. It also gives us shape to all our APIs. All our APIs are now going to look like that. So that's how we created the Windows runtime. And we made it accessible to the C++, all the .NET languages, and to JavaScript. And each language has what it calls a projection to that Windows runtime. .NET knows how to deal with the Windows runtime and treat it as a .NET API. C and C++ know how to deal with the Windows runtime. You know, obviously, the Windows runtime itself is actually implemented using C and C++, so we know how to call these very natively. And we also created another easier layer to make that possible, which I'm actually going to talk about today. In addition to just providing this binding to the Windows runtime, we also went and added a new UI framework that is accessible to us in C++. And that UI framework is XAML, which is based on the same technologies that currently exist for Silverlight, WPF. Anybody already does .NET development? About half, okay. Anybody doing .NET already uses Silverlight or WPF? A good number. Okay. I'll answer your question in more detail tomorrow, but today I'll just give you the very short answer. Yes, you can use C++ for that. C++ is certainly the way to write it, to handle the hardware the best. We're the closest to the hardware. Performance is a matter of profiling. Yes, of course, if you really want very, very performant applications, tradition has been C++ is what gives you that. Now, as any performance-conscious person is going to tell you, the profiler is your friend. So you should use a profiler when you really care about performance. But yes, absolutely. If you like C++, if you're already familiar with C++, we give you the tools to make it possible for you to have a good quality experience to build that using C++. And I'll talk a lot more about XAML actually tomorrow. XAML is not the only way that you can that you can create metro-style applications from C++. There are actually a number of other ways that I will talk about. But really, why would you want, and you sort of led to that with your question. Thanks for the question. Why would you want to target? Why would you want to create a Metro-style application using C++? After all, you haven't been hearing a lot about C++. Who's been hearing a lot about C++ from Microsoft over the past 10 years? Last half year. Okay, good. So one of the things that we've noticed inside Microsoft is that, you know, the industry is certainly not letting go of C++. I've worked at C++ for the past 10 years, on Visual C++ for the past 10 years, and we've known that. But it's now nice that, you know, the rest of Microsoft is seeing that C++ developers continue to exist, and much of the world's best applications are written in C++, continue to be. Much of the, Microsoft's best applications are written in C++ and continue to be. Windows, Office, SQL, all the other top applications. In addition to that, we're noticing a trend in the industry to move more towards mobile devices and move more towards places where power is very important, where characteristics of the device and, you know, things like sensors are very important. We're also noticing a shift towards, you know, even on the really large scale, to data centers, where, believe it or not, the highest cost for a data center is actually its power, electricity consumption. So power is also very important, whether it's on the really small device that you carry in your pocket, a tablet that you hold in your hand, the laptop that now all manufacturers want to make them 9-hour batteries, not 3-hour batteries, or the data center that, you know, a really large corporation like, you know, Amazon or Google or Microsoft are building. For all of those, power is important. And the best way to get power and performance is really through C++. Additionally, we realize people are developing for multiple platforms. How many people here target Windows exclusively? Just a few, okay? How many target more than, you know, two platforms? How many target three? All right, so, you know, the majority of you actually target multiple platforms, and that's what we notice with many of our customers. It is not only about Windows, it's about lots of other platforms. And how do you make that possible? How do you write code that you can leverage a good part of it in multiple platforms? C++ is certainly one very good way of doing that. So when it comes to power and performance, when it comes to portability, C++ is a very, very important language in that space. And that's why we think quite a good number of applications will be written using C++. Developers will continue to think about that. And that's why we made it a primary language for Windows 8. And that's why we have a prime experience, a great experience for it in the Visual Studio tools in Visual Studio 11. So I touched a little bit about XAML and, you know, XAML being one way to create Metro-style applications. There are actually multiple ways. I'll talk about three here. And I have a dedicated talk about the first one tomorrow. The first way is basically a XAML-based application. You have a new UI framework. You can create that, you know, your markup using the XAML. It's basically declarative XML. You create your markup that way, and then your code can be just standard C++, so you're using that. The next one is DirectX. Somebody's already touched it. How many people already use DirectX? 4 or 5, a handful. Okay. DirectX is a very good way of creating 2D, 3D graphics, very common in games, very common in CAD, very common in experiences that are not necessarily boxes and controls and things that you click on, but objects that you interact with and move and run freely around the screen. So you can create a DirectX-based application from C++, nothing to do with XAML. You can actually mix both DirectX and XAML if you want to. And finally, C++ even has a space in JavaScript applications. Windows 8, one of the models, is going to be to create an application using HTML5 and JavaScript. And because we created WinRT to be a cross-language binary interface, you can create a C++ component that exposes a WinRT interface and then call that easily and directly from JavaScript. So you can have a JavaScript application that handles most of the UI using HTML5, and then for some, say, part that is very close to the hardware or some part that really needs fast performance, you can drop to C++ for that. So I'm not going to go into details for these, but I wanted to give you sort of what's possible. Yep. The question is, can you mix DirectX and XAML easily in WinRT? The answer is, in the developer preview that you have, you can't. But yes, you will be able to do that. Yes.
WPF is vector-based, so it automatically uses DirectX, I think.
Yeah, so that's a good addition. So XAML is already implemented on top of DirectX. So you're using DirectX internally by using XAML. But if you also wanted to add your own DirectX surface and paint to that, you can mix your own DirectX with XAML too. Say that again, sir. Yes. I will answer that part specifically tomorrow. I don't want to take this talk to be mostly about XAML. Okay, well, I can talk to you about it offline after as well. But in general, one of the things that is really nice about XAML in Windows 8 is that it's 100% native. There is no .NET in there. It's 100% native. So when you're using XAML from C++, you're down to the metal, talking 100% machine-compiled code with no runtime in the middle. So that should help you control the performance characteristics of your application. DirectX is certainly a great way to add the 3D effects on top of it. So I talked a little bit about the UI layer and Metro style applications and what's possible. I'll focus now on the real part of this talk, which is, okay, now you have your application in mind, you know what you want to create, and you're thinking, how do I call those Windows Runtime APIs? We've added several thousand new APIs in Windows that are all in this new WinRT style. And these are APIs that are available to you as a Metro-style application developer. Okay, how do you call those from C++? As traditional C++, we provide you with many ways, not just one. Okay, I'll start with option 2 first. And I'll tell you why I started option 2 first, because I'm actually recommending that you use option 1. But option 2 is a template library. Okay, we call it the Windows Runtime Library, the library to access the Windows Runtime Library, WRL for short. The nice thing about WRL is, well, number one, we use it internally to build Windows Runtime. So Windows Runtime is built using WRL. So we know it handles Windows Runtime really well. The second thing is WRL is 100% a template library standard, no language extensions needed to run that. And it provides you with access to the Windows Runtime the way it was implemented, with no sugar on top. So Windows Runtime is hresult-based. It is hresult-based. Windows Runtime is 100% comp-style programming. You get to do comp-style programming with all the glory nested things in it, all of that stuff. If you like how comp code looks like, if you like, who has used ATL? If you like how ATL looks like, you're really going to like WRL. If you would rather have something that looks more like object-oriented C++, you're probably going to write component extensions. Okay? So basically created, think of it as a version of ATL that works very nicely with Windows Runtime. It's very expressive, but is also very verbose. When you write, you're going to be writing a lot of code. When you're dealing with Windows Runtime, you're not going to deal with it at the higher abstraction layer. If you're thinking, for example, a Windows Runtime class inheriting from another, you will have to understand that this is not real inheritance, it's aggregation, therefore you're going to handle aggregation manually yourself, which is not a simple, class A colon public B. It's templates, a lot of templates. If you like that, you can use that. But what we're really telling people to use, you can see that I'm encouraging to use option 2, right? Option 1 is a set of language extensions. So when we designed the Windows Runtime, we looked at it and we said, hey, you know what? Well, we want to provide a prime experience for C++ developers targeting the Windows Runtime. We know that C++ developers are, the elitist of the elites. They're the best developers out there, or at least we think so. We think so of ourselves. But we know that we also don't like inflicting pain on ourselves. We appreciate ease when it comes while still providing us with the performance. And that was our design inspiration for what we call the C++ component extensions. C++ component extensions are just a set of language extensions that we added to C++ to make it understand the Windows Runtime and talk natively to the Windows Runtime easily. So that you don't have to understand a lot of the gory details. You probably have to understand them, but you don't have to express them every time you're writing a class. And we added some of the nice things there, like make it more object-oriented, use some of the nice OO features like exceptions, and have that be built in first class in the language. That meant that we had to add a couple of keywords to the language, which some people don't like, and for those people who say, you can go with option 2. But for most people, we think they're going to actually appreciate a couple of language extensions that make their life a lot easier when writing those applications. And for the rest of this presentation, I'll focus on what component extensions look like and how you can use them to write WinRT code.
Yes?
Does component extensions look like an STL type form or syntax? A lot of angle brackets for each and the like. Yes and no. Let's walk through the presentation and then see if I answer your question. What we've heard from people is they like angle brackets, but not a lot of angle brackets. So we're trying to strike a balance there, not have to have everything be, you know, a template of a template of a template. But of course, we love STL. We think that's how you should write C++ code. So component extensions work really, really well with STL. And we love templates, so some of the stuff that we do and expose here is templated. But you don't have to write a lot of templated classes for every WinRT class you create. If you want something that really looks a lot templated, it's the Windows Runtime Library. Okay. So I talked a little about, you know, the language extensions. The most important part for us was there are types that are exposed in WinRT. When we thought about the Windows Runtime, we said, okay, Windows Runtime, we're going to create a set of classes. Those classes are going to have methods and properties. And on those methods, they're going to take parameters. What types? What is the string type that is going to be passed? Is it a std colon colon w string? Is it something else? Remember that it has to be used in all the different languages. And it has to work very nicely across binaries, which much of the C++ types don't, unless you go down to row pointers, which then other languages can't deal with. So WinRT created a set of its own types, much like COM did. So we created a prime experience for accessing those types from C++, in many cases directly translating them to existing C++ types that you have so that you don't have to worry about it. So int, for example, translates to whatever it is that WinRT needs, and we automatically do that for you. Some others, like string, we expose in C++ as a new string type. Two concepts are important in C++ component extensions and in WinRT. Number one is automatic ref counting. So WinRT works by ref counts. So an object is created, somebody points to it, it has a ref count of 1, another person points to it, the ref count is increased, the object is never destructed until nobody's pointing to it. At that moment, it's destroyed. Okay? So that's ref counting and how it works, much like COM. So we added the concept of ref counting automatically for you, so you don't have to do add ref release manually like you do in COM. The second thing is we added exceptions. While WinRT itself is not exception-based, WinRT is all H results, what we expose in C++ component exceptions is a very nice exception. What we expose in the C++ component extensions is a very nice exception-based model that make you just call a function and then, you know, get the return type in the return value, as opposed to get it as an out param somewhere, have to check H results. You don't have to check H results. You can just catch exceptions. So it's a nicer C++ object-oriented model. And the most important part is that we respect that binary interface across languages. So now we create a WinRT component from C++. You can use that WinRT component anywhere and from any other language. For those who are interested and want to know like every single keyword that we added, here's basically the list of them. Added a way to create a class that then becomes automatically treated as a WinRT class. So we call that a ref class. Similarly for interfaces, a couple of things that are used in WinRT, like events, a way similar to function pointers. So we'll talk about events and properties. I'll go into details of these. But when you look at these, there are three categories, basically. The important part is that left column. Data types and different ways to handle those data types. How do you allocate things? And for that, we add a new way to allocate. And then the pointers pointing at whatever is allocated. And these are the categories of things that we added to the language. Types, allocation method, and the pointers to what's allocated. And I'll go through each one of these next. Before I do that, I just want to have one word about C++ component extensions and where to use them. We've added a new set of extensions to the language. We've added new types. The right place to look at them is where you need those types, not everywhere in your code. We did not create a new C++. We did not create a way for you to go and rewrite all your code in it. This is just a way for you to talk to WinRT, to call Windows APIs, or to create a component that others can call. So use that only there. Basically, on the right there, you know, use it at the boundary, what we call at the boundary. All your module internals should be written using the standard C++. If you need a string, don't use the Windows runtime string. Use the std.w string. You know, if you need any, you know, if you need containers, don't use the C++, you know, the WinRT containers. Use the C++ containers internally. When you have your C++ components talk to each other, continue to do what you're doing today. Don't use WinRT types between your C++ components. But when you are exposing something through a WinRT interface, that's the only time you start using these types and the only place that you start using those language extensions. So basically, we call it C-language at the boundary. We don't want you to change your core of C++, your core of portable C++. Any questions on that before I move on? All right, so I'll talk a little bit about the language. Okay. This is a slide. If all you cared about was how do I call a WinRT API, one of the few thousand that we created, how do I call that API, this slide will get you 90% of the way there. And you don't need to know anything beyond that. That's all you care about. Okay. So what does this slide really tell you? Tells you about the two most important abstractions that we've added. Number one is how do you allocate, which is the ref new instead of just new. And number two is how do you point to what you just allocated, which is the hat symbol. So the hat is a new thing that we introduced as an extension to C++. And everything that you allocate through using ref new, you can point to using a hat or what we call a handle. Okay? So you get a handle by allocating something using ref new. When the compiler sees that you said ref new, it goes, instead of just creating that normally on the C++ heap, it actually goes and talks to the WinRT runtime and says, hey, I'm creating a new thing. Create that where you know it should be created and add a ref count to it because now one person pointed to it. Okay? So let me take you through an example here. See that bottom, you know, example at the bottom? We have a handle to a person type, okay? And that handle at line one is originally just pointing to null. Null putter is a feature. Oops, who's seen null putter before? Null PTR? Only a couple, okay. So null PTR is actually a feature of standard ISO C++. This is a standard C++ feature. It's new. You should use it everywhere where you used zero or null before to talk as a pointer, to refer to it as a pointer. You know, zero is a problem. It's one of those places. It's actually causing a problem for us in C++ in function overloads. If you pass, you know, zero to something and that function takes an int or takes an int pointer, which one should be called? We don't know because sometimes zero is special and we sometimes treat it as a pointer and it's okay and it's the only special one. So we should actually stop using that. We added a new real null to C++ and everybody should, you know, every time you're starting to write capital null or just zero to assign it to a pointer, you should from now on start using null PTR. It works in Visual C++ since 2010, and you know, majority of the standard conformant compilers now have that. So anyway, so you're saying line one, it's null pointer. Okay, it points at nothing. Line two is just the start of a new C++ scope. And I'm doing that because I want to show you what happens when you exit a scope at line six. But for now, we're just starting a new scope. Line three, I'm actually allocating a new person. So the compiler goes, talks, you know, creates some code, and that code will talk to the Windows runtime to create that object in the right spot. And what happens is now you have a handle denoted by new P, and that handle points to that object. So that object exists now in runtime and has a ref count of one. Only one person, one handle is pointing to it. Line four, I'm modifying the object, ref count does not change, right? Line five, I'm using that previous, the pointer that was previously a null pointer and pointing to that same object. So that same object now has two people pointing at it, a ref count of two, at line five. When we exit the scope at line six, one pointer goes out of scope, new P, right? So now the ref count is still one. So the object still exists in memory, new P no longer points to it. Line seven, we make P point to something else, in this case null, so nobody points to that object anymore. We destroy that object. It goes out of scope completely, nobody's pointing at it, it gets destroyed. Who thinks this is garbage collection? Who knows how different this is from garbage collection? Exactly. It's the determinism. So you said that, you know, the key word here is, I'll underline deterministic. You know, this behavior is deterministic. Every time nobody's pointing to the object is gone. The difference is that if there was a garbage collector, at line 7, it only gets marked as, yeah, we could potentially kill it at some point in time when we think it's right. Okay? And then, you know, that might happen at line 700. It might never happen. It might happen exactly at line 7. We don't know exactly. But with C++ component extensions, with the model that we have here, it's the same deterministic finalization, just like regular C++. So it's a very key and important thing in the design for component extensions is to maintain that C++ behavior of things. When they go out of scope, they go away. And in this case, when the ref count goes to zero, they always go away at that point. Good. Excuse me. All right, so I had said that, you know, the previous slide was the slide that you really all you needed to know to access Windows Runtime APIs. Well, we work with C++. We're sure we're going to be supplying a lot of things to other people who need stuff. So we're probably going to need to go a little beyond than just calling Windows APIs. We're going to do our own components. How do we do that? So this is what we need to know for that. So you can create a new class type. Let's say you wanted to create one of those classes similar to what Windows exposes. You wanted to create a class for something that then somebody can call as a WinRT class. The way that you do it is you just add the keyword ref in front of class. So everything here pretty much looks like a regular class except for ref. Who can notice what else is different? The hat's inside, right? That's a good one. What else? Internal. That's right. Who is familiar with internal? Has seen it before? Handful. Okay. So internal is one of the other things we added for these classes. So typically for C++, we have three access visibility modifiers: public, protected, and private. Right. Public, protected, private continue to work the same way that they have worked. We're also adding internal, which if you've used C# before, it's much like the C# internal. Which means it's internal to that module. You know, it's kind of public, but it's internal to that module. Others cannot see it. Okay. So, excuse me. So this class that we just created is ABI safe. ABI safe meaning you can expose it in a binary, export it from a binary, and somebody else can call into it, and it'll be versionable, and it will work. Okay. Additionally, and more importantly, is inside the implementation of that class, it's pretty much like any other C++ class. You know, the implementation, you can use C++ component extensions, you can use standard C++, you can call STL, you know, you can use STL algorithms, use STL containers, member variables of this can be anything. It's just a C++ class, except for one restriction, and one restriction only, which is its public interface. Anything that is public or protected, pretty much, has to be using WinRT types. So you cannot expose, for example, a std colon colon w string as a parameter to a public method. Why is that? Sorry? It's not binary compatible. If you exposed it that way, nobody would be able to call it whatsoever, right?
Why does it don't they use a
string? I'm sorry?
Why is the string
why is WString not used in the interface? So we could have possibly, you know, went and did our own conversion automatically from a WinRT string to a std colon colon WString so that we hide things under the cover and do it for you. We didn't want to do that explicitly. And the reason we didn't want to do that is there's quite a bit of overhead that is going to happen out of creating a new string type, copying things, because the WinRT string is actually a very small, very efficient string with zero operations. You cannot even change it, you know. It's immutable. So you create a string, and if you want to change it, you create a new string, and you use that old string to create the new string. You want to add just one letter to it, you create a new string. That's good when you can have multiple people pointing to that string, and then you don't have to go creating it again. But it's not used, you know, if you want to do building on it, which you can do in C++. So they're not exactly the same kind of string. So you do a lot of things behind your back, and it will impact performance. And we know C++, we care about performance. We love our performance. Anybody who does these kind of crazy tricks behind our back, we don't like them. One of the things that we had in mind was when we're doing C++ CX was to minimize that performance overhead. We're not doing a lot of crazy things behind your back. If there are a couple, we tell you about them in advance. It's a trade-off. You're right. The comment was, it makes a lot of headaches to convert strings. However, as I'm going to talk about in a later slide, we give you a lot of tools to just make it very easy to go from one to the other. It's, even with vectors and stuff like that, because a lot of the underlying implementation in some cases is actually standard stuff, so we make it easy for you to go from one to the other. Very good question. And you will notice that up till now I had not mentioned C++ CLI at all. How many have used C++ CLI before? Okay, 5 or 6. Okay, C++ CLI was a way for C++ to play in the .NET world, a way for C++ to expose a component to the .NET such that C# or VB can call it. The syntax that we use is very close to, if not exactly the same as, C++ CLI. It's not exactly the same, but it's very close to. It turns out that in our design, when we started, we didn't actually decide we were going to create C++ CLI again. Let's use that. And we went and tried to find what's the best way to implement something on top of WinRT. And it so came that what we already have for C++ CLI fits that bill. So you're asking explicit, and precisely what we did was we reused a lot of the syntax there. So if you're already familiar with C++ CLI, you will find that this syntax is already very familiar to you. The one key difference, of course, is C++ CLI targeted .NET, did not generate, you know, machine code directly, generated what's called MSIL that then runs in a runtime environment, which is a .NET CLR environment. None of that happens here. This is, gets 100% translated into, you know, x86 64-bit machine code. Now, you asked the specific question of what is different, okay? Well, the semantics of what gets created is different, but from a syntax level, there are a number of things that do not make sense anymore in WinRT. For example, pin pointers, GC root, things like that. They don't make sense in WinRT, so they're not available. I don't know if we've created a document yet that outlines all the list of things. We'll probably do that at some point in time.
Can you mix them?
Can you mix C++ CLI with C++ component extensions? That would be really, 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 really. No, you cannot. You cannot. We do not. And one of the reasons we do not do that, we didn't think of it as a scenario at all, is C++ CLI was created to make it possible for you to have C++ talk to another language, namely C# or VB. Well, WinRT actually does that. If you want to talk to C#, expose a WinRT component. Now C#, because it understands the Windows runtime too, can call your API. Can you consume a CLR component? The CLR component that you have, because now C# knows about Windows runtime, can possibly be exposed as a WinRT object, which then you can consume. But you cannot consume it just as a .NET component. Okay? Good questions. So I said about the restriction. You have to have standard WinRT types. The WinRT types be part of your public signature, but internally in the implementation even of the public function or anywhere else in the signature, you can have anything that you want. It's just C++, right? And the way that you use one of these classes is how I showed you in the previous slide, which is ref new the class, and what you get back is a handle. Okay? Next, I'll just show you a quick demo of this. Let me put this in practice. Okay? So this is Visual Studio 11, the developer preview. Anybody downloaded the developer preview? 5, 6, okay? This is Visual Studio 11 developer preview, blown up to huge, huge size, just so you can see it everywhere. This is the designer for XAML. Very nice designer. If you're used to MFC, this kicks MFC's pants, you know, 100 times. From a designer, much like the Silverlight and WPF. Nice drag and drop, you know, things line up, auto layout, very fancy. I've added something very, very simple, which is 2 buttons. And, you know, we're going to have an application that captures an image or a video using this webcam and this laptop and show it back under the button, okay? So this is mainpage.xaml, which is the, you know, my first XAML file in the application. When you do file new project, this is, you know, what's on the right is what gets generated automatically for you. What I did on top of file new project is add those couple of controls, and I also tweaked one thing which says allow this application to use the webcam, because not all applications can use that without asking the user. Okay, so I added that as a little XML snippet in it. Actually, it's through the GUI. You right-click project properties and you add that. So now I'm going to go to the implementation of that. Behind the XAML file, all you really have is a header and a CPP, right? And the header has a ref class called main page, right? And the implementation is pretty much empty for now. So I'm going to do something that generally we should not do in code, which is I'm going to add a new ref class in a CPP file. Typically, don't try to add types in a CPP file. I'll just do it here for simplicity. Okay? So we're going to call new class myCamera. Ref class. You'll notice that finally we get auto-completion automatically on keywords. My class, sorry, my camera. Okay. I'm going to add a public method there. And we're going to call it void capture image. Okay. So I created a new ref class. Okay, I can go and use it from one of the functions here, and the way to use it is my camera hat camera equals ref new my camera, and then I can do camera arrow and I can do capture image, right? That's pretty much very much like C++. The only difference is ref class instead of class, hat instead of pointer, ref new instead of new. It's just the same. In fact, because in C++, who was at Jim's talk just before this one where he was talking about what's new in C++? Half of you, more than half of you. He showed you one of the new ISO standard C++ features called auto. And auto, of course, works with the new stuff. So you could just do that. Auto camera equals ref new. Auto, for those of you who weren't or don't know it, it's just a way that says, tell the compiler, save me the typing. You know what is assigned to this. Make that the type. Simple. Beautiful C++ feature. All right? I can build that. Did somebody have their hand up? Did they miss that? So build that, I can run it. Actually, let me put a breakpoint so you can see how it goes. Here, let's run it. It's going to run application. When I do create image, it's going to run that handler. I can step through this code. And now it's going through all the stuff, okay? Now let's do some of the funny ref counting that we did before. So let's say auto camera here. I'm going to add a new, let's just make that simple. Let's make that null for now. Add a new scope. Did I misspell that? Auto camera 2 equals ref new my camera. Right? Camera equals camera 2. Exit the scope and call this. Okay? Let's put it, make this an outputter at the end to show that as well. Well, let's see that in action. Press the button, should invoke our... If I step through this, you will see camera here. Oh, this one is not big enough. Okay. Camera is a null pointer, and camera 2 doesn't point to anything, so you can't see anything there. I'll step 1, and I'll see that camera 2 now has ref count of 1, right? I'll assign camera to camera 2, so what should that do to the ref count? 2, right? Now both of them pointing to the same thing with a ref count of 2. I go out of the scope. One of them is out of scope, is gray. The other one, ref count of 1. I can call that. And I can go to null, and now it's gone, right? The object is not in memory anymore, okay? Pretty straight and simple. But ref new and assigning to a handle is pretty much the core of the new C++ extensions. Now let's go to more advanced things. How are we doing on time? We're good. So much of winter... Yes.
I didn't get the point completely, but if you don't have this explicit assignment to the null pointer, you go out of scope, then it will increase the count as well, right?
That is correct. The question was if you...
Yeah,
the question was if you didn't add that equals null pointer at the end, when you exit the scope, it would go away, and yes, absolutely. I just added it so that we see it under the debugger, but yes, absolutely. Yeah, you shouldn't even make it a habit to assign stuff to null pointer if you don't need it. The compiler knows how to do that when you go out of scope. All right, so WinRT is based on interfaces, much like COM. It's based on interfaces. An interface is basically a contract. Okay, you're saying this is the contract that any class implementing this interface should abide by. And in this case here, we're defining an interface about animals, and we're saying any animal should be able to play. There is not an animal that you cannot play with. Animals are playable creatures. That's what it is. Okay.
Sharks.
It'll be a different kind of playing, right? Not as safe, perhaps. This is pretty much the equivalent of if you did in C++ and you said, virtual void play equals 0. Be the same thing. In fact, if you want to put virtual and you want to put equal to 0, we're not going to prevent you from doing that. Feel free to do them. We just tried to save you some typing. If you try to implement something in there, we're going to start getting annoyed and giving you warnings and error messages. So now you've defined an interface. I'm going to go sideways. Okay. So you're going to... One of those was a laser pointer, right? Yay. Okay. So now I'm going to go to having interfaces that inherit from other interfaces. We can go and say, oh, there are special kinds of animals that are called felines. Okay? And this family is animals that love to scratch. Okay? So any animal that's a feline, not only can it play, It can also scratch, okay? And we know one of those animals, okay? And we call it a cat. So now we can go and implement that interface. Notice here you're saying interface class. Here you're saying interface class, basically saying you cannot go and instantiate a new one of those. But here you're saying a real class, a ref class, okay? So now cat is a ref class. It implements the iFeline interface, which means it should have at least two methods, and these are the two methods. One of them should be play, one of them should be scratch. You could have more if you wanted to, but at a minimum, you should have those and you should implement them. So that allows you to use that in the way that we've seen before, which is a hat, a ref new, and you can work. Here you can put a cat hat, you can put an iFeline hat, or an iAnimal hat, because a cat is all of them, right? Is the virtual for the methods here mandatory? You know, I am not sure if we're going to complain if you remove it or not. It's probably a good practice to put it since it is a virtual. But I think if you didn't do that, you'd be... you can't hide it because it's an interface. So yeah, I'm not sure. I'd like to check that. Pretty easy to find out, though. Pretty easy to find out. It will only... In a future one?
Yeah, so I think it's not mandatory.
Yeah, maybe it works that way. I'm not sure. So here's the thing. We've changed this quite a bit over the months. And this build, a small story kind of irrelevant to this. This is a build from last September. We have been actually working since last September. So we added new builds since then. I've had one of those builds on my laptop. And I'm coming to the Netherlands, and I get a call from somebody who says, Tarek, remember, we've not shipped those builds externally yet. So please make sure that you use the one build that we've showed to people externally so you don't confuse people by showing them builds that things that if they take home, they're not going to be able to compile. So I've tried to stick to the build that you have. And what I struggle with sometimes is, was it in that build or not? So it's easy to find out, though, since it's a real compiler. This is a proof that this is not a Photoshop thing. So you can do that. So we can do this interface, class, any camera. Okay. Somebody told me never go out of the script for your demos before because things crash. So I am breaking that cardinal rule. So hopefully things will continue to work. Okay, so we can do this, right? Void camera clicks. Okay. So let's see if that's going to work. Virtual. Let's do the right thing first. See if that works. Or crashes. Oh, good catch. Good catch. Right? Did I miss public? Perhaps, maybe. There you go. All right. So this is interfaces implementing them. Yes?
Is it possible to implement classes, like implement only one or two of the functions of the interface and leave the rest to subclasses?
Is it possible to implement one of them and leave the rest to subclasses? No. If you've implemented that interface, you created a ref class, it means that people can create this ref class and assign it to an iAnimal. And a compiler thinks that an iAnimal will have a scratch. If you cannot scratch that animal, compiler is really upset. And runtime is really upset. So no, that's not possible.
Also the other way around, implementing one function for an interface is not possible?
implementing
I
one. You cannot have an interface with an implementation. An interface is strictly a contract. Good questions. Good questions. All ref classes are sealed. No, not all ref classes are sealed. You can inherit another ref class from a ref class. You can do that. In fact, that wasn't possible in C Sharp. Perhaps. I'm not an expert in C Sharp. But that is certainly possible in WinRT and in C++ component extensions. In fact, at the end of this talk, I will go quickly through another demo that will show you the what class inheritance looks like. Did I miss one? Yes. Just like with the rest of C++, when I said that the hat and ref new are the only thing you really need to know, you could actually get away if you wanted to without even hat and ref new. Because you can allocate things on the stack in C++. So you can do this, like database connection DB. So you didn't have to do database connection hat equals ref new database connection, right? You could just do it this way. And then you don't even need to worry about hat and ref new. But that really wouldn't be understanding what's going on. So what happens here, though? Because here means go create something on the stack. What really happens here is a convenience for you as a C++ developer that gives you the illusion that it is a stack object. It is not a stack object. It gives you the right semantics for a stack object, which means when it goes out of scope, we're going to decrease the ref count by one. And when you access it, you can use a dot instead of an arrow. Right? So you get that same convenience. But we know how to do the right thing, which is go talk to WinRT, go create one of those special objects, add the ref count by one, do exactly the same thing.
So if you pass a pointer to this stack object to a function which stores it somewhere else, will it be safe to use a pointer after this object goes out of scope?
Because it's a ref counted object, yes. Okay. Can you use this after this goes out of scope if you assigned it to something else? It's a ref counted object, yes. Yes.
Can you use properties like a
C#? I'll talk about properties in the next couple of slides. Wait for properties. So now, this database connection, when it goes out of scope, if you had a destructor, it would be called, right? Which is really nice, and that's what I like about ref counting versus garbage collection, because let's assume this was a database object that actually held a real connection to the database that was limited in the number of people who can connect to it. When you go out of scope, you've decreased the, you call the destructor and you no longer connect to the database, whereas in garbage collected world, excuse me, whereas in a garbage collected word, you would have to wait until the garbage collector thinks it was a good time for you to release that. Or you would use the using keyword and do other things and do finalization and kind of get you to the right way to do finalization, which is this. So, yeah. So we just make things simpler. There was a question about properties. Can you do properties? Properties are basically a field. Think of it as a public member variable, right? Only you can actually do funny things with how people assign things to it and how people get things from it. So in the simplest case, you can go and say, there's a string, a name, and then that's a property. Compiler, go please figure out how people can assign things to it and not. So the compiler goes and adds a private, string hat, and every time somebody tries to assign something to the name, it assigns it to that backing store. Every time somebody tries to get something from the name, it reads it from a backing store. Yes?
Last question. Huh? Does it also, can you also implement those special collections used by Linux Presentation Foundation?
Can you implement?
Special collections, when something changes in the collection, the event will be triggered, so you can adjust your UI code to it.
Can you do events and delegates, basically? You're always asking one slide ahead. You really know. Have you seen my slides before?
What I think it means that you're limited to certain aspects that are not in C++, or that are in C++ that cannot be used.
Observable collections. Can you do observable collections with properties?
Yeah.
So these are not observable objects, right? So like a normal property is not an observable object. You cannot automatically raise an event that says, unnamed changed. You know, you'd have to do that yourself by implementing, you know, how get happens and how set happens, and then when somebody, you know, calls set, so you're, you know, this next part. One of the things you can do with properties is you can modify how people set and get things from it. So if you wanted to implement a behavior that says every time somebody changes the name, go do X, okay? Or you can even add listeners that then get called when X is done. Then you can do your own setter, and then in your own setter, assign things to the backing store, then go figure out who's listening to you and call them and dispatch and do all those things. That doesn't happen automatically for you. So yes, you can implement that behavior, but you cannot get it automatically. One of the ways to implement that behavior is using events and delegates, which I'm going to talk about later.
Yes.
Can you have private setters? So they control the access visibility of that? Yes, you can. Yes. All right. And the way that you would use a property is just assigning to it as if it was a member variable, right? Delegates and events. Okay. Delegate is the easiest way to think about it is a signature for a function. So it's something like a function pointer. Who struggled with creating function pointers before, knowing exactly where the star goes and when the parentheses go? It's one of the things that, you know, I love C++, I love pointers, but just creating the signature for a function pointer, and God forbid you actually want to put that in a type def. It just becomes horrendous, right? So this kind of makes it easier, also makes one of those things that can go across module boundaries, right? So here you're saying, I'm going to have something called property changed that is going to have this signature. So anything that is a property changed is basically a function that has this signature. It returns a void, and it takes two parameters. Okay? That's simple. Simple enough. How can you instantiate one of those things? Ref new again. What do you ref new? It needs a function pointer. Who's seen this thing before called a lambda? Raise your hand if you've seen it before. Who likes it? So this is one of the, you know, it is not new in the world of programming, but it's new in the world of C++. This is an ISO standard feature of C++ called lambdas, and it's a way for you to go create a nameless function. How many times have you wanted to pass something to an STL algorithm that, you know, needs a function pointer, and now you have to go create something somewhere, get the, you know, the thing to that, pass the address to that, but you only need it at once, and it's only that place, right? It's just a waste of time. You can just go add that function on the spot. This is standard C++. This has nothing to do with C++ CX. But C++ CX works with C++, so you get this. So you can assign it from a lambda. You're saying, create one of those new functions, and this is actually the body of the function right here. Here's the parameters, just matching here, and here's the implementation. Okay? You can assign it from, if you had already a function, you'd give it the address of that function, name of that function. Or it could be a member function. You could do that too, right? When you call it, you just call it like a function, because pretty much it's a function pointer, right? So this is winrt function pointers called delegates. Events are a way to combine properties with delegates. So if you wanted to create a property that was actually a delegate, that's an event. So say you want, you know, in the previous example when we had name and you wanted to notify people when the name changed, so you want to create a new event that people can assign delegates to that then you can call. Okay, so this is how you would do it. You go and say public event, and you'd, you know, give it your delegate here, right? And give it a name. You can, and each event has three methods. You can add listeners to that event, right? One more person listening to that event. You can remove one from the list of listeners. Or you can trigger the event, raise that event, which basically calls all the listeners. Automatically, if you do the top one here, we're going to implement all of these for you with a normal thing, you know, normal implementation without any custom crazy thing. You want to do custom crazy things? Go ahead and do that. Okay? Most people will not need it. How do you subscribe to an event? So you like an event, somebody exposes it as a, you know, a public thing in their class, plus equals your function pointer or your delegate. You could also call the colon add if you wanted to. When you remove, you use minus equal. One thing with WinRT is you need a token if you're going to remove something. The way that you get that token is by calling add. So if you wanted to remove an event, you want to call add and save that token. Most people really only add events and let the object destroy itself and all the events go away after that. Okay? So I've talked a little bit about exceptions and how everything in WinRT is actually H results under the cover. But with C++ CX, we wanted to make sure that we have a very nice object-oriented interface on top. So we went and did automatic exceptions for you. So, and they are directly mapped to the H results. With every H result that can be thrown from Windows, there's a class that wraps it, and there is a class called platform :: exception, which is the base class for all these exceptions. You can catch a platform exception, which will catch all WinRT exceptions. You can catch ... which will catch all exceptions, including WinRT exceptions. Or you can catch a specific exception. You can catch just out of memory and do that. And now when you call an API, and that API returns efail internally under the covers, what you get in the Windows runtime is failure exception, which you can catch. Okay? So you can deal with exceptions, but because you're C++, you want to know what's happening under the cover. What's happening under the cover is if it was going out of your module, we translate it to an H result, receive it on the other side, read that H result, and throw it. Okay? WinRT has a set of collections. These collections can be generic collections. So we implement generics, which allow you to do something like this. Much like templates in C++, right? Only more restricted. Only not compile time. There are actually two things. So with C++, we said, why not do both? Templates are really nice, allow you to do this beautiful, sometimes crazy compile time things. But also, they have the restriction of not being binary compatible at the binary level. You cannot expose a template, then use it somewhere else in another binary. Generics, while they don't have that beautiful compile time behavior, allow you to do something at the binary level. So WinRT is a binary level thing. It doesn't care about what's happening internally inside your app. So internally, you can use all the templates you want. They will never show outside, right? But when you want to expose something at the binary level and you want it to be generic at the binary level, generics are how you do it. And you basically go and say, let's say this is a generic interface of pairs. You do just like with templates in C++, type name T, type name U, and then you can use T and U internally, right? When you're you have a class that implements this generic, that's how you're going to do it. When you use a generic, now you can go say, I have an I pair of a string and a URI, then you know what T and U map to. Okay? Because we're C++, we can also do templates. So you can get all the compile time craziness that we want, right? It actually, it's not craziness. It's like, do we do the best things with templates? It's what allows us to be very expressive. I don't do it in this talk, but if you look at the Windows Runtime APIs, many of them are now asynchronous so that you don't block the UI all the time. And to handle asynchrony, it is not the easiest of things. So we actually went and extended, C++ made it easier to do asynchronous using a template library. And it would have been impossible to add the language and make it, make the code look beautiful without the facilities provided by compile time templates, right? So you can do templates in WinRT as well. In fact, you can mix templates with generics. So that IPair generic interface that we had, you can create a template class that implements that interface. This is a template, this is generic, and they work together hand in hand, and you can use it there directly, right? It's beautiful. Generics are only on the interface level. You can use them internally if you want to, but they're the only thing that can go at the binary level. The important part in this slide is, since we're exposing a number of things at the interface level, somebody's going to have to, tell the runtime what those things are. And that somebody is a serialization format called the Windows metadata. So we have WinMD files for every DLL. that pretty much exposes all the public stuff and saves it there. Just the public stuff, not your internal implementations, no code, just the types. And says there's a ref class here, there's an implementation, there's an interface there, and that ref class has three public functions and these other methods. And that's saved in a WinMD file. And when you're referring to somebody else's WinRT component, you just refer to their WinRT file, to their WinMD file, using a pound using statement, or from the IDE you can go do something, project properties, add reference, something. Okay? Partial classes. C++ now has partial classes for WinRT as well. We needed that for the designer. You know, the designer implements a lot of code. We've tried that before with Windows Forms. Anybody used Windows Forms with C++? Poor souls, I'm sorry. It was a nightmare, you know. We wanted to generate code. We would just go directly in your classes that you're using, try to add a couple of things. Please, please don't touch them, because if you touch them, the whole, you know, the hell will break loose. It was a mess. So now we have partial classes. The compiler, you know, the designer gets the top thing. They put it in its own header file. It can add anything it wants to it. And you get to play in your real class. And whatever has been added here at the time when we create your real class, we go basically text insert everything from here, there, done. Okay? It's the simplest way. Shouldn't the last class have the partial keyword there? No. Every partial class can have as many partial parts as possible. The last one has to be the one that closes it. And that does not have partial in it here. Partial only in the previous ones. Last one cannot be partial. Last one by the last one in that translation unit. You cannot have one in a, you know, in a header file and another in a different header file that don't include each other. They all have to be in the same translation unit. The compiler has to see them all together in the same CPP file or the headers that are included from this CPP file. Okay? I'll skip that demo for now, since we're starting to run out of time. But just a quick word on libraries. I'm not going to go that into detail. This has its own 1.5-hour talk, but I'll provide you with just quick pointers. Create a family of collections in WinRT. So there are types that need vectors and types that need maps. So we implemented platform:\vectors that are ref classes, WinRT types, and platform:\maps that are also ref classes, WinRT types. These are pretty much wrappers on top of std vector and std map. They don't expose the same interface, but they're implemented using this. So from any vector, you can go tell it, please give me the underlying std vector, and then start playing with that. If you already have a std vector and you want to create one of those, you can do that too, and you can just, in the constructor for this, pass the vector. That will cause copying, but if you actually don't want to copying and you can just move with one of the new features in C++, ISO C++ 11, called R-value references, you can do, you know, when you're assigning something, do std:\move, which will do the double ampersand thing, and it will automatically move all the contents of the std vector into the platform vector here, and no copying was done, no harm was done, no KUs were hurt. So you can actually get the performance that you want there. So that's the one thing. Vectors in WinRT are actually observable. So when a vector changes, you can get it. You can listen to that event. And maps are pretty much the same way. Okay? So just remember, we have vectors, we have maps in WinRT, and they're implemented on top of the std stuff. Anything that you have here can integrate very well with STL. The one thing I'll highlight here is this. Okay? If you have a vector from WinRT, how you iterate over it happens just with the traditional STL algorithms. We did not implement new WinRT algorithms. We've just modified STL to work perfectly, just as you expect, with those WinRT containers. So everything from line 2, 3, all these things, this might have as well been a std vector. Everything else here would be exactly the same, not a single line change. Okay? So we know how to iterate over these together. You can assign them to each other. You can get them from each other. You can do whatever you want. And that's pretty much it. C++ is exciting. We live in the Windows 8 world. We can create beautiful applications. Tomorrow I'll talk to you about how to do the UI part of this thing and do a beautiful UI application using XAML. You have two options for the code. You can do the Windows Runtime Library if you really love angle brackets, or if you're willing to use a couple of language extensions that will make your life a lot easier, please use what I talked to you about in this slide. A lot of documentation that you can get as well online. When you get the slide deck, these are actually have links to it, so you can click on them and see them. And finally, we have, often we do a usability studies, which is basically where members of our team, we go around and we talk to developers. And we try to understand what their pain points are, what they like, and how they're using our software. And then we try to show them some of the things that we're working on that we haven't told other people about yet. And we go and tell them, hey, this is what's coming down. What do you think? And try to get their feedback. And let's say we're designing something new, we'll run it by them, and they would be the guinea pigs, the first people to actually try it and give us feedback on how well it works or how well it doesn't work, so that we can get a chance to change it before we ship it to everybody else. So we've actually tried it on real people, real users. So our usability team is actually coming to Europe soon, and they're looking for people to volunteer and be the first to see some of the stuff that we haven't shown other people yet. But also give us feedback about our product. If you're interested, go there, bit.ly/cppdeveloper, and sign up. And they will contact you, and you'll have a fun time, I promise. It's a really nice experience. And now we have however much time you want for questions, since there are no other sessions after this one, but I'm staying here. If you want to stay, ask questions, please do. Otherwise, we're done. Thank you. So if you have questions, I'm here.
Yeah, one question. Windows 8 targets multiple platforms. The C++ compiler can generate ARM code too?
The question is, Windows 8 targets multiple platforms, including ARM. Can the C++ compiler target that? Absolutely, yes. C++ compiler targets Intel and AMD, 32-bit, 64-bit, as well as ARM. And all the cool things that, if you were at Jim's talk a couple hours ago, and he was talking about how we make all the generated code faster and vectorized and automatically parallelized and all those cool things, happen on ARM as well. Can you say that? Ah. The question was, C# added this really, really cool thing called await. It's a nice keyword that makes using asynchronous easier. Do you have C++ await? We don't have C++ await. However, we have a really nice template library because we have templates. So we have a really nice template library that allows you to do continuations and things like that. So you can do, call an async API, and then say, task T equals async API, and then do T.then, and then have a lambda that does all the rest of the stuff, which is actually pretty neat and cool. So yes, you can do that. It's not await, but it's the C++ equivalent. Very, very nice. In the future, we may think about baking it directly into the language. We didn't want to push our luck. We've added 6 or 7 keywords already. But, if you try the asynchronous libraries that we've added, which are basically based on top of what we call the Parallel Patterns library, which is a library that we've shipped ever since Visual Studio 2010, that add the ability for you to create your own parallel programs without having to deal with threads and mutexes, just at a higher level as a task. If you haven't looked at it, you should go look at it. It's called PPL, in a file called PPL.h. Easy enough. So we've added support in PPL for that. So you still get a nice high-level syntax for asynchronous code. In COM, we had all this nice apartment stuff, and you could create objects out of process. So beauty is in the eye of the beholder. So different people look at some of these things and would find all the value in them, and others look at it and are scared about it. We did not try to expose any of this here. Under the guts, if you really want to see the glorious part of WinRT, and you want to, at WRL, we ship the source for that. Go and read it, and you'll see FTM, you'll see STM, you'll see nice stuff underground. You really don't need to worry about it.
But it's just really based on COM.
A lot of concepts were used from COM.
Okay.
but I won't say it's based on COM. But a lot, you know, we've borrowed a lot of concepts from COM. We still have IUnknown, but you don't have IDL. We don't have, you don't need to create IDL files for the ref classes, for example. But with WRL, you would need to create IDL files if you like the pain. So if you like angle brackets and IDL files, then you can do that. You had a question. Did I hear another question? I don't know about WPF. I know about XAML Windows 8. And with XAML Windows 8, yes, you can.
So it's all just on one HWind,
not exactly HWind based. There are interfaces that you can get that will allow you to get to the underlying surface that you can paint on. And you can do your own composition, basically.
Okay.
But, yeah. Well, you will see more about that in the beta. It's not in the beta yet, but it's coming. Sorry, it's not in the preview that we shipped in September, so it's not in the code that you have, but it's coming in the beta.
Can you lay XAML on top of
DirectX? Absolutely. You can have a game with all the people shooting stuff and all that, and then you know when somebody clicks the about, then you just use XAML because it's easier. There you go. All right. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming over.